Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got Adrian Powers right here.
Hi, Jeff. How's it going?
It is going great. As I hope everybody knows, I hope you listened to the podcast before this one. If you didn't, you should, because you'd hear Adrian's fascinating story, both how he became a filmmaker and the film I know him for, Brolga, which won an award at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2019, and is in the Discover Indie Film TV series. It's in Season 3, Episode 4. The Discover Indie Film TV series on Amazon Prime Video. I didn't mention Prime Video. Just go to Prime Video and search for Discover Indie Film. And if you watch Season 3, Episode 4, you will see two remarkable films. One called The Wind Phone and then Brolga. Wonderful stuff. And now we're actually, this is a four questions podcast, which means Adrian's going to answer the Discover Indie Film four questions, which are favorite films of all time, a film he thinks is underrated, a film that is overrated, and a lesser-known film that people should seek out. I can tell this filmmaker is a bit of a cinephile, so I'm looking forward to your answers. No pressure.
So shall we just dive straight on in?
Dive right in. And nice. In theory, the rule is favorite films, limit three, but you can go a little further if you need to. Nothing strict.
Well, yet. I definitely will cop to the cinephile thing only because, you know, I'm really not good at many things, Jeff. Like I cannot fix a tire or do, there's so many things I'm inept at, but I'm pretty good at watching and learning useless trivia about movies. So I definitely do have opinions, but I think I was looking at this because I filled out this list and I thought, I reckon people are going to look at this list and they're going to go, this guy is a weird putz. Like some of my stuff, that's a wonderful reaction though. Well, it's true. And I think, you know, what's really good is that you said favorite, right? So what we're not talking about the films that I think are the best films, because that is just, it's a can of worms that I just have difficulty managing, you know, because it just changes and it's such an objective thing. But I do have three favorite, and I'm going to preface that this obviously, I think, like probably like yourself and so many of your listeners, this answer is a rotating roster of answers and it's constantly changing. And the one at the top is always changing. But thinking about it today and just being honest and tracking some of the conversations I've had about this lately, I'm going to answer this. So I'm going to go with the three. So the first one is The Matrix.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, totally changed my life in every way, like completely, literally in every way. Like it was one of the things that really compelled me to be interested in filmmaking by virtue of the film itself. And it's, you know, the amazing caliber and strength of the film itself, but also because of the unbelievable making of materials, all the behind the scenes documentaries and all the supplemental materials that went into the process of making that film was such an eye-opening experience for me. But also because on a personal level, that film's philosophy of, you know, challenge what you see around you and don't just believe what you're told and have use critical thinking and trust that people are going to try and put one over on you had a profound impact on my life in terms of, you know, my whole attitude towards philosophy and religion. And so that The Matrix completely changed my life. And it's still such a badass, awesome cyberpunk sci-fi, you know, action extravaganza. It's got everything.
It's brilliant. And I always like to jokingly, but not quite jokingly, say that you cannot prove it's not true.
You can't. That's the thing about it. Like I was so compelled by what I saw in that movie that I went to university to research and to study philosophy and metaphysics and all these things that the film touches on so expertly. And I will say that my answers for two and three are not these movies, but I will die on the hill of saying The Matrix sequels are also really great. I really love them. And if you haven't watched them in a while, go back and revisit The Matrix Reloaded and The Matrix Revolutions. They are not as good as the first movie. They are full of a lot of clunky pacing and some moments that do not work. And a lot of it it's very wordy. But again, there is so much in those movies that is reaching. And you watch them now, 20 years later, because again, it's been almost 20 years since those sequels, they're a good hang. The Matrix Reloaded is solid.
I will defend them this way, which is I have tried showing a lot of films to the 13-year-old, and I think we showed her The Matrix actually at least 2 years. It was pre-lockdown, so she was probably 11 when I showed her those films. A lot of films do not hold up. You'd be amazed at the films that even a film like Aliens doesn't, the action doesn't kick in soon enough and a young person just loses interest in Aliens. The Matrix, she loved all three. I loved watching all three with her. I did warn her that two and three were not quite as brilliant, but I think we watched The Matrix on a Friday night and the next two, I'm forgetting, Reloaded and
Revolutions.
And the next night, and she was like, you said they weren't good. They were good. I'm like, yeah, they're good. At this point, I tried explaining to her, imagine what it would be like waiting a couple years and then paying $17.50 to see these on the best screen in LA. And then you're like, you know, you think you're just watching people dance for no reason for like 5 minutes. And she said, okay, I get it. But
I get it.
But in retrospect, you can just watch it now and enjoy it for what it is, which is a continuation of a genius story.
It is. And you know, one of the most amazing things, and you know, I won't harp on about this for too long, but one of the most incredible things about all three of those Matrix films is that when they were released on home media, on DVD and Blu-ray and whatever now, they came with commentaries. And most of the time, you will get a film with a commentary track from maybe the director, maybe the screenwriter. If you're lucky, you're going to get something like the Lord of the Rings box set, which has so many of the cast and crew doing the commentary. But the commentary tracks for the Matrix trilogy are so amazing. There are two commentaries for each one of the films. One of them is from philosophers who loved the movies and loved all three of them. And the second commentary is from film critics who don't like the films. And the intention was done by the Wachowskis to say, look, we know that some people love these, some people hate them. We're not here to tell you what to think. Maybe you'd like some further discourse from either side of the debate. Watch these, make up your own mind. Which I just thought was an unbelievable gesture of like artistic, you know, insanity that is still just brilliant. And I can't remember seeing a stunt like that pulled since then. But the thing about those philosophers' commentaries that I think hits the nail on the head about those two movies that's so important is that first Matrix film, the plot, even though it was revolutionary at the time, like the plot is very simple, you know, like he's, you know, fighting to free humanity from evil robots with Kung Fu. I mean, that's cool. And people responded to that. Those second two movies are about, no, you're not the savior. The robots are not the bad guys. We can't just blow everything up. We actually need to pierce the veil here and try to find peace, which for me, when you think about it, is so much more profound than pew, pew, pow, pow. You know, the end of that third Matrix movie is Keanu Reeves going, oh, okay, the answer is just to surrender and not to do anything. And through that, we'll have, and I actually think they're incredibly profound, as clunky as they can be.
Absolutely. Okay, well, There's a second favorite coming.
Number two is David Fincher's The Social Network from 2010, which, you know, I'm a huge Fincher fan. I actually love everything that Fincher's ever done. But The Social Network, I was one of the people that was like, a Facebook movie? Like, what? That's ridiculous. And I'll never forget. In 2009, I went to a Steven Soderbergh was in town and he was giving a speech, a little like a presentation. It was just to like film industry people. And I was lucky enough to be able to go along to it. And he, if you know anything about Soderbergh and Fincher, those two are really thick as thieves and they love each other's works and love kind of dissecting each other's movies. And so a huge portion of this presentation from Soderbergh was him just putting Fincher's movie Zodiac on the screen and just like breaking it down, going like, look at this shot, look at this, look how late he brings this in, but look how well it works. It's unbelievable. And then towards the end of it, he was just doing a Q&A and someone brought something up. And I don't even remember what the question was, but he goes, oh yeah, I was talking to David. He's just in the midst of doing pre-production on the Facebook movie. And there was some sniggers kind of from the audience, like the Facebook movie. And Soderbergh goes, don't laugh. It's going to be the next All the President's Men. And that's when I was like, and he was deathly serious. He's like, it's going to be like, you know, it's going to blow everyone away. And I was like, wow. And so, and then when I saw the film, it did blow me away. And I do think it is the next, you know, it is the next film of that nature. As a piece of filmmaking, as a piece of writing, I think it's absolutely unbelievable. And I'll use this airtime to say, Fincher, take up Aaron Sorkin's offer to do a sequel. We need to see, with everything that has happened, the journey of Facebook since that movie came out, we need to see Jesse Eisenberg reprising the role of Mark Zuckerberg in those hearings. Like, we need to see the behind-the-scenes insanity of him dealing with Cambridge Analytica and the Trump stuff. Like, there is an unbelievable second chapter of that odyssey that Aaron Sorkin has said, yeah, I want to do it, but Finch has got to direct it. And I want to see that almost more than any other movie.
I'm not going to disagree. I think that everything that has happened since that film is far more interesting and more important. I mean, my God, Facebook has, when that film came out, Facebook was not the 4 billion user beast.
It was only 750 million. Yeah. It's included at the end of the movie in the closing graphic. And that movie is effectively a movie. It's a business story. You know, it's a going into business cautionary tale. It's about, you know, be careful because people who are, you know, people will screw you if they have a chip on their shoulder sometimes. Now it's become, this force is a huge governing dynamic of our society. And it's just, so I think it's a great movie, which I really appreciate and enjoy from a filmmaking perspective. That's the thing about Fincher. Like, his movies are so calculated. There's not a frame or anything in his frame that is not 100% completely controlled by him. And that can make his movies, admittedly, sometimes almost antiseptic. Like, sometimes you can sense that they are so controlled and you can sense that there's almost no spontaneity to what's happening. But sometimes, you know, but that's also a strength. I like watching them and going, oh my God, look, you're just in the hands of this guy and nothing about this is left to chance. It's like watching, you know, like Michelangelo or something. It's amazing.
Agreed. Agreed. You just described, well, I'll tell you later because we don't need to hear my thoughts. What's your third?
My third is going to be potentially the most controversial, potentially the most laughable. But I think the one that I will stand behind the most, and it's the latest entry to this list, and it's extremely recent entry, but when it comes to favorites, I'm just going to be honest with my heart. My third favorite film at the moment is Zack Snyder's Justice League. I am a huge DC Comics fanatic, have been since I was a kid, and love all those things. But I am one of the people over here that's like, I love when people take risks or do alternate spins on material and try to, I mean, frankly, I love things that try to deconstruct the things that that we love and in pop culture. And I personally really responded to what Zack Snyder and his team did with Man of Steel and Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. Ultimate Edition, the theatrical edition, is a dumpster fire. But the Ultimate Edition, with the 30 extra minutes of character development, is great. Neither of those two movies remotely fall into my favorite film category. I just really enjoy them as films from that filmmaker and as DC Comics films. But his version of Justice League, which is a 4-hour epic, which features, you know, 6 protagonists and 3 antagonists, should not work by any stretch of the imagination. It should not function as a movie. And I actually think that it's one of the most fun, enjoyable, rollicking science fiction adventures that's been released in recent memory. You know, when the film was coming out and there was all the buzz and there's so much controversy and so much, you know, chatter in the film industry, I would have people come up to me really looking for a fight because they know how much I like Zack Snyder's work. And there is a perception in some kind of corners of the film community that Zack Snyder's supporters are all kind of rabid, aggressive film bros. And all of these things are just generalizations. That's not true. There are some people, there's jerks in all communities. Generally speaking, these fandoms are made up of a broad spectrum of different groups of people. But I would get a lot of people coming up to me going like, that sucks. You know, like you shouldn't be liking this. And I'm like, guys, I'm just going to like what I like on the grounds, on the basis of the strengths of the material. And I think that a movie that goes for 4 hours, that feels like 2 hours, that gives me such a huge air punching sense of gleeful childhood satisfaction. And that also still manages to be true to the filmmaker's intent of deconstructing this pop culture mythology almost as the replacement for the mythological Greek pantheon of old. That's my jam, guys. I'm a philosophy nerd. I love that movie, and I've shown that film to 24 people who are like, I did not like any of the DC Comics movies, and I do not like Zack Snyder as a filmmaker. And I went, granted, watch this movie anyway. And they go, that was a great film. So that's where I come out on that.
I've heard this from a couple of filmmakers I respect, and to my great dismay, I haven't watched it yet. So yet another person who makes me want to watch it. And I don't want to distract you, but I think Zack Snyder's great. I think one of my favorites of his is Sucker Punch. I can't get enough of Sucker Punch. I just find it so fun. But
exactly. It is such a vision. You know, that's the thing. Like, you know, he's got this reputation for kind of being dour or, you know, overly negative. And, you know, I think maybe people think of him as maybe juvenile in some way. I don't know. I don't care about any of that because I just respond to what the work does. But also as a person, I mean, reputation-wise, I think you're scarcely going to find someone with a better reputation for being a great, friendly, wonderful collaborator. You're never going to find a single person who worked on any of his films to say anything other than he's a joy and a friendly zip. You know, he's a jock. You know what I mean? Like he's one of those artist jocks, you know, those jocks that can draw, that are just great, friendly, bubbly people to be around. Like, I think I really would love to meet the guy, but I cannot, Jeff, I really recommend the movie. If you're into his other films, definitely rewatch the preceding two films because they do flow into it wonderfully. But, you know, this movie is actually, it's such an such evidence that it was all designed to be a trilogy, because even though maybe the two previous entries maybe were, they definitely got dark, there's not many like, yippee, like Superman moments in those movies. Well, they're in this movie, and that proves that it was this journey about getting to this place. I described it as just a crazy psycho intergalactic romp, and yeah, chuck it on, grab some snacks. It's a long haul, but believe me, you'll be like, wow, that flew by. And the movie's broken up into 6 chapters. So you know when to pause, you know when to go to the toilet. It's a great film.
Very nice. I'm in, by the way. Night before last, we watched, Birds of Prey, and then the new Suicide Squad.
Go.
Just to get
What'd
a little.
What did you think of the Suicide Squad?
Well, I liked it. Actually, I liked it better than Birds of Prey. I thought it was good.
We're locked down. Locked down, and we don't have HBO Max.
Oh, so I watched it on HBO Max. I still haven't gone back to the theater. I'm a bit squeamish.
I get that. I totally get that. You know, we do have obviously avenues for all these things, but HBO Max putting their films on to screen day and date is still such an unbelievably controversial thing just in the US film industry. The notion of that trickling down and changing the Australian film industry, even though the Australian film industry does kind of pivot and react based on the moves of the US film industry, we just don't, like literally right now, you know, like how can we watch The Suicide Squad? There is no way. You just have to wait. It's like, okay.
Unless you do a VPN that makes it look like you're in the US.
There is a way to do that, you know, but at the
end, I don't know.
Look, to tell you the truth, you know, because we've had this horrific situation where we as a, not, I digress, but long story short, Australia really got a bead on the COVID-19 thing really well. And we were functionally completely opened up again with very close to no vaccination. We just got down to zero transmission. But then obviously, like everywhere else, Delta came, whooped our butts. And now there's just no contingency for anything. So now we're back into complete lockdown with only, you know, I'm luckily fully vaccinated, but it's a bit of a mess here. So I look forward to checking out The Suicide Squad when I can.
Excellent. All right. Well, question 2 is a film you feel is underrated.
I had a couple of entries for this and I had a whole bunch of things that I thought could be warranted, but I'm going to go with the film that I feel deserves, well, needs this kind of treatment to be legitimized. And it's a very esoteric entry, but the film I'm going to go with is the film adaptation of the Stephen King series, The Dark Tower, which is a film that came out, I think it was in 2019, 2017, maybe 2017. I forget, which has got Idris Elba in it. And it's an adaptation of Stephen King's, 7-volume giant sprawling Western interdimensional sci-fi epic, The Dark Tower. And I don't want to say too much about it because the reason it's so underrated is because a lot of people who saw the film who were fans of the books said, well, this is a terrible adaptation because how are you supposed to condense seven giant novels into one 90-minute film? This was doomed from the start. It's terrible. And they disqualified it or never even bothered with it. I think your general punter, your general, general movie-going audience member who went and saw it was like, that was a perfectly fun movie. Maybe other people were like, yeah, whatever, it wasn't for me. I loved this movie. And again, not to say too much about it, but the simple reason why it's so important is if you know anything about the Dark Tower books, that they are a book series that is about interdimensional travel and the notion of temporal time loops and the notion of time repeating itself over and over again. And the filmmakers have gone out and said this, the film of the Dark Tower is a sequel to the novels. You should be watching it as a sequel to the books. Now, if you haven't read the books, it's fine. It functions as a standalone story, which is why people who haven't read the books, I believe, and in my experience, like the film a lot more than people who love the material. But if you understand what the actual premise of the film is supposed to be, I think it's actually an unbelievably clever little piece of clockwork of a movie, which quite literally takes the character arcs from this long-standing 25-year novel series and gives them an ending. And all of this was done with the knowledge and understanding of Stephen King, who was part of the collaborative process. So it's a weird thing to say because it's a very small esoteric film that a lot of people haven't seen, but you're asking about underrated, and it does not have a good reputation as a movie. And I think that's a real damn shame because I think if you read the books, go into the film with the knowledge that it's a sequel, it's actually a really incredible experience. So there's my little thing, tipping the cap to the Dark Tower film.
Excellent. All right, now this should be fun. Overrated.
Hey, keeping it simple, I believe the most overrated movie maybe in the world is Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight. I enjoy that movie a lot. I'm a DC Comics fanboy, as I mentioned. I think that there's a lot to like in that movie from everyone involved, and Heath Ledger's performance is unbelievable. Then again, so is Christian Bale's. So is a lot of people's performances in that movie. But that movie is like five movies in one. I'm not slamming anyone because I'm a fan of Christopher Nolan and Memento, and you know, I actually really enjoyed Tenet, which seems to kind of go against the grain, but The Dark Knight is just like, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, now the movie's over. Oh, no, wait, it's still going. There's another thing. The Joker's hatched another plot. And it just keeps going. And there's a couple of bits in it that are kind of like, some of the humor and stuff like that. I think Batman Begins, his preceding Batman movie, is superior in every way to The Dark Knight. And I think the fact that everyone thinks The Dark Knight's the greatest superhero movie of all time is nuts.
It's controversial, and I appreciate you for sharing that, because I've had friends jokingly say to me when I tell them, you know, I just don't think The Dark Knight's very good, and they often the response is, well, I liked being your friend till now.
Yeah. Yeah.
people are really passionate about it, and I always like to joke with people. I say, no, you know, the way I see it, Nolan, he just doesn't like superhero movies, and he gave it a shot. And he tried to do him his way, but it just didn't work because it's not his jam. And, yeah. You know, it just doesn't work for him. And he tried, but it didn't work. That's honestly how I feel. I actually like everything else he does pretty much. I guess Interstellar might not have been perfect, but almost everything else is.
Interstellar's another problematic one for me also.
But he's brilliant. And it's like, you know, it's like if Picasso had decided, you know what, I'm going to try to paint. I'm going to take one stab at trying to make something look like Monet. And, you know, probably wouldn't have worked.
That's a great analogy. And look, yeah, I think there's so much about the craft, and he's an undeniable master. You know what I mean? Like, who cares what I think about Christopher Nolan or any of his films? But at the end of the day, like, those characters that as they appear in those movies, I'm not trying to sound like I'm not being a gatekeeper or any kind of disqualifier or anything like that. They're just not the characters from the books. like, you know, Batman doesn't take 7 years off because his girlfriend died. And, you know, he's not Howard Hughes on a, you know, I was like, cool. He's taking it in a different direction. He's using these characters to make a statement. You know, he's making a political statement or a social statement. He's having fun with it. He's exploring drama that he finds compelling. And a lot of other people find compelling. So I fully acknowledge that. But I remember seeing in the cinema, like, I couldn't have been more excited for that. I was frothing to see that movie. And at the end of it, I was like, guys, it just went on for too damn long. It's just like a 3-hour movie. Yeah. And I just said that about a 4-hour movie. Look at that. Look at the difference. Like, I would literally much rather watch the 4-hour Zack Snyder Justice League cut than The Dark Knight. And I will be more enthralled throughout that the Snyder film.
Absolutely. I would say more, but we don't need to hear more from me. So let's get your last one. I love that pick, of course. Wonderful. And the last one is a lesser known film to seek out.
Yeah. And I'm really happy with this one. So the film that I would recommend people seek out is a film called The Escapist. It's a movie by Rupert Wyatt, I believe is the director. And it's a movie that's got Brian Cox in it. And it's a film from 2008. It's a British film. It's a low-budget British crime film. It's basically about a group of criminals in a British prison hatching an escape and their escape plan and how it goes. You know, one of the oldest story archetypes in the world. But it's a really wonderful film. It's incredibly tense, incredibly engaging, really great characters that really get you on board, great cast. Very originally done. The filmmaking craft is really exquisite. Looks beautiful. Looks almost like it's from a different era. It almost looks like it's a 1970s film, or even kind of. It's got a wonderful aesthetic, and I don't want to say too much to spoil it because it's got a fantastic ending. But suffice it to say, kind of the first half of the movie is, well, it's a non-chronological narrative film. The film is kind of cross-cutting between the planning of the escape and the escape itself. And suffice it to say, kind of towards the end of the second act of the movie, it starts to go into some really unexpected territory that you go, wait, where is this going? But it never goes, oh my God, you've lost me. It just goes in a really unexpected direction that you go, ah, that was a great film. And it's a short movie. It's like a 90-minute film. So yeah, The Escapist, I have no idea where you can find it on streaming. I haven't looked because I've got a DVD copy that I bought 10 years ago going, loved that movie. People should see it.
Sounds fantastic. And I have to say, this is could be hyperbole, but I don't think I can name one Brian Cox performance that wasn't fantastic. Like, I can name the time. You know, I could even make fun of Michael Caine for his Alfred, like, talk about walking through it. But Brian Cox is always remarkable.
He's unbelievable. And I am absolutely one of those stalwart believers that Brian Cox's rendition of Hannibal Lecter in Michael Mann's Manhunter wipes the floor with Anthony Hopkins' rendition of the character. You know, talk about Anthony Hopkins' performance of Hannibal Lecter. Again, absolutely, absolute legend. Love his work. He's a genius. I adore him. I kiss his boots. But the Hannibal Lecter performance from The Silence of the Lambs now is very big. You know, it's very exaggerated and like a caricature. You go watch that movie from 5 years prior to that, Brian Cox as Hannibal Lecter, it'll scare the living hell out of you. He is so restrained, and yet you're like, this guy, geez, I'm glad I'm not in that room with him. And that's the feeling you want to have with that character.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, that concludes our list. And thank you, Adrian Powers, writer, director of Brolga, and many other things. In fact, I'll throw it out there. You should look for Dive Club when it comes on Netflix. There's going to be a show on Netflix called Dive Club that Adrian was the writer and editor, right?
Oh no, you I didn't. Edit a writer. I was one of the writers.
In the writers' room, yes.
Co-wrote 4 episodes, but we did not edit it. We had some fantastic editors who edited the show. They should be incredibly proud of the work they did. Kicked it out of the park.
All right. Well, go to discoveryindiefilm.com because there you will get a link to Adrian's YouTube, which you should use to check out all the cool stuff he does, and go to his social media, which, go ahead, tell us. It's at Adrian J. Powers.
Hit me up on Facebook. Just look for my name, Adrian Powers. Everywhere else is at Adrian J. Powers.
Excellent. And now I will wrap this thing up. Like I said in the intro, Adrian is here answering the 4 questions because his film Brolga Brolga. Did I say that wrong? I think I said it right both times.
It worked.
Which is an Australian crane, actually. Some people, you know, Americans don't always know. I bothered to look it up because every time I watch the film, I love that the image of the bird at the end, and it all works. All right, so Brolga is in the Discover Indie Film TV series. So if you go to Amazon Prime Video, search for Discover Indie Film, Season 3, Episode 4 has Brolga in it. And Brolga played at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2019, the last time we were in person until hopefully November 2021. And if you want to learn more about the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, go to ShermanOaksFF.com. And if you want to go to social media, it's at ShermanOaksFF. And Sherman Oaks Film Festival has a sister festival that takes place in June in the same theater, same people behind it, just a different name because we were launching and we tried two names and they both work. What are you going to do? And that one is the June Festival is filminvasionla.com and social media for it is at filminvasionla. And amusingly, we get more international films with the one with LA in the title and then Sherman Oaks gets more local, but it's wonderful to get a film from Australia at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. So I'm going to thank Adrian Powers once again.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for having me on. It was so good to talk to you. It's been a long time coming, but I'm really glad we did it. And once again, thank you to you and the whole team from the Sherman Oaks Film Festival for selecting our movie.
Thank you. Thank you for everything. And I have to say, thank you for your enthusiasm in doing the podcast. I know it was November 2020 during lockdown that season 3 of the Discover Indie Film TV series came out. And I had a series of horrible things happen in my life, and I just stopped recording podcasts. So it's great to be back on the horse, and it's glad to have you. What nice imagery. On the horse with me.
Well, I hope to be able to have something screening at those film festivals again sometime in the future, and you know, hopefully one day we can do this again.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you, Adrian. And thanks to everyone who's listening. Oh, wait, I didn't mention. Give this podcast 5 stars. Give the Discover Indie Film TV series 5 stars. Go on Adrian's YouTube and like it and click thumbs up or whatever you can do on YouTube. YouTube doesn't
like,
have
subscribe.
Stars. Does
you know it? How it goes.
Yeah. Give us, I for years, I was not a star beggar, but now I'm a great grubber. It's time to try. Yeah. I'm asking. Got to ask.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, guys.